Blog Talk Radio.
Finally, a global program specifically for wealthy, philanthropic women who are humble, gracious leaders. Sylvia Global's host, Gil Sylvia, invites you to join her in these conversations with first ladies of nations, households, business, and communities. Trustworthy, live conversations with women from around the globe provides a place for your voice to connect with women of integrity, passion, and purpose. Now, here's your host, Gail Sylvia.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here with us today. You know, Randolph, we're going to have to change that intro because this is my intro to you hosting your own show.
That's so funny. I was just thinking about that. But it's good for me, Gail, and it works just fine for now. It's so exciting just to be able to do this with you. And if we sound a little giddy and happy and speak a little fast at first, I think it's because we really are excited, right, about where this can lead and some of the things we're going to bring the audience in these coming weeks. So I'm very excited to be doing this with you, Gail.
Thank you so much for joining us and the incredible message that you'll be sharing with women around the world to encourage and just, I think, enlighten us at many levels in a way that's not commonly associated with the industry that you're affiliated with, you know, the fashion industry and working with entertainers. There's this, you know, other part of our being that is drawn to it but also resists it. And I'm
exactly.
So excited
Yeah. You'll
be on here, you know, Sylvia Global every Wednesday morning from 10 to 11, taking calls and responding, and we'll be blogging about you and just really promoting the message that you have that inspires women. We're going to start off today, though. Again, this is an introduction to your own show and The Look. You know, you wrote a book called The Look, A Guide to Dressing from the Inside Out.
That's right.
The inspiration, you know, of what it means to be beautiful and getting that look. So
right, because it is one of those things that and speaking to what you said about, you know, this sort of elusive quality of the fashion industry, it's a sort of a mixed message. You know, we create images that are very inspirational and ethereal, and then we wonder why women are confused and don't know how to put it together because the model looks that, but how come I don't? You know, and it's not a literal thing. It's an inspirational thing. That's what fashion magazines, that's what models contribute to, a kind of almost entertainment aspect of getting the viewer to look. The interpretation of how one creates their own look is where I found the missing link. When I, about 10 years ago, I was transitioning from New York to Los Angeles in my career. I wanted to be back on the West Coast. I was having to transition in one of the divisions of my business. And it was also a breath, a moment, a time when we paused to think, God, I've been working 16 hours a day for the last 12 years on a business, and you're just literally exhausted. But I had noticed in my fashion shows that, which I had annually twice a year, and it is something that really drives the heartbeat of your business because you can't miss it. It's a deadline. It's a goal-oriented thing. You know that on September 12th, you have to be ready no matter what, so you're always kind of calendaring yourself to be ahead. Fashion designers are working on what we're going to be wearing next year. You're living in the future. What do they say? It's best to be present. In a way, this is a career that takes you out of the present. You have to sort of transpose yourself into tomorrow and think, what will she want to wear next spring, next fall? So you are kind of accelerated. You're always moving a little bit at a pace that is so frenetic that sometimes a breath is necessary, and sometimes that can be as much as a sabbatical or writing a book. In this case, it turned out to be writing a book and being more reflective. And so before I wrote the book, I really found my inspiration point and jumping off point to be one simple thing. There was a commonality of women coming to me after my fashion shows, and then I started noticing, watching them in their seats during the fashion shows, slumping slightly lower down in their seats as Amazons in size 2 dresses that were 6 feet tall sashayed in that, you know, inimitable walk down the catwalk, and they were loving the clothes but unfortunately becoming very intimidated. It's the reverse message we're trying to give women. We don't want them to walk away feeling less than or less beautiful or I can't be that, but the same holds true for magazine covers of Halle Berry and Jennifer Aniston and whoever airbrushed. You know, we are creating an ideal today out of people that is dangerous because it's not reality. they're highly airbrushed. They don't even look like that. And it makes, a difficult Mount Olympus for women to climb in the world of beauty and style and self-confidence, ultimately, at the bottom of it. So it dawned on me that these women who were slumping down in their seats were even in the business. They were fashion editors, they were heads of stores, they were buyers, and they were intimidated. Imagine how a woman who lives not even near a Saks Fifth Avenue or lives in a more rural part of the community or place in the world, this is just, this is rocket science to her. Like, you know, and I think many women had abandoned following trends or dictates of fashion and the fashion world and designers. If you look back historically, people in historical periods dressed in a style of the times that was reflected by what we call the fashion. And the fashion was a dictate of something that created the trend, and we'll get into that another time. It's not important at this point. But today, it's diverse. You can be in line at a bank and see a woman in Indian sari, and it's actually a 13-year-old girl and not an Indian woman. And you can see an Indian woman in a French banker suit, a Chanel suit. And you can see another woman in her 20s who's dressed like a news anchor in a corporate suit. And you can see another woman who's dressed in an incredible town and country look of denim and suede and kind of what we've come to know in American sportswear classic. It's about individual style. In the 50s, if you look at photographs, as far as back as you can go from there in time, people look the same in photographs. Every woman had a hat, a glass, a handbag, and shoes that worked. There was a more of a lifestyle of the times that defined the way people looked. God forbid you didn't look good in a poodle skirt and bobby socks. You know, you're out of luck, because that was the silhouette of the time. When they say Dior's new look, he created a new shape that shifted fashion, which was defined by that small waist and full skirt. What if you didn't have a small waist back then? What if you were more middle-figured and you carried the weight around the middle? You didn't look good in the clothes of those times. You know how people say, I was born in the wrong time? I should have been born, because you have you love a period so much that you always like to wear vintage clothes. And it's true. Sometimes your time isn't maybe in the style department necessarily on trend, but that's what individuality is about. And what's so exciting today, Gail, is that I think this sudden shift in consciousness, spiritually, emotionally, across culturally in the world, and your show speaks to this, empowering women, is that individually, more than ever, individuality is so necessary. And it's counterintuitive to the way we teach it. You know, we sort of teach with a blanket experience that do this, don't do this, don't wear that. We have makeover shows that say women shouldn't do this. That's all kind of baloney, in my opinion. That was pretty blunt. But much of that is, again, defined by the medium it's selling itself on. It's a TV show that's a makeover, so the reveal has to be dramatic, right? Otherwise, the show will flop. We better make that woman look as different as she did when she walked in the door. That isn't always serving the subject. The woman's like a deer in headlights after you straighten her hair, dye it blonde because it's naturally black, put her in high heels because she only wears flats. She's never going to really look that way because it's not practical to her lifestyle. They've done her a disservice.
But, Rana, what about the, you know, kind of, gee, I'm sorry, I lost the thought because there were so many, you were covering quite a bit there. You know, we're drawn to the fantasy.
Yes, the fantasy.
You know,
and when we get a moment
to live and experience the fantasy, which is what proms are all about, you know.
You're right.
Which is
and that's a good
is,
point. That's something
you know,
that I
that's
didn't
what weddings
we,
are
that's,
about.
That's right.
You know,
that's really dependent upon yourself, you know.
It circles right back to our core confidence.
Yes.
And that confidence speaks to our body image, perceptions about our, you know, that others, that we perceive others to have about us, whether they're true or not.
Right.
And what parts of ourselves we let go and which parts we embrace and celebrate. So being drawn to the fantasy, there's not necessarily always something wrong with that. It's what we do with it. So I happen to love those shows, you know, those kind of extreme makeovers. But I particularly like the lifestyle ones where they save people's homes and their families.
Right.
But when I watch the beauty makeover shows, the quality, the the quote-unquote quality ones, they seem to address the whole person, you know, versus just that exterior part, because it seems that if the woman isn't comfortable within her own skin, it's
correct.
Like the friend who lost, you know, 150 pounds and now is weighing 105 pounds, but only sees herself at 150 pounds.
It's dysmorphia. It's absolutely true. I completely relate to this. And I think the reason I was able to write this book, believe it or not, is because I had dressed so many women, celebrities, and seen that they are no different than every woman, whether whatever economic bracket they come from, wherever they live, who's never graced a red carpet for an Oscar. They're the same woman, Angelina Jolie, and they're the same. This idea that a fantasy that you're speaking about and wanting the feeling of that girl standing on Machu Picchu with the 100 necklaces on and those incredible outfits, that's it's the feeling you want. That picture gave you a feeling of power, freedom, empowerment. God, I wish I was that brave, or God, I wish that was beautiful. You've created the fantasy in your thought.
Wow.
The thought
wow.
is the fantasy.
Wow.
There is no reality in dressing yourself that way, because I could dress you like that and you wouldn't feel it, because you're not in Machu Picchu and you're not standing around the pond. And people might look at you a little strange when you're standing in line at the bank in that outfit. Do you know what I mean? Unless you are so confident that it makes you, transportively makes you feel incredible. And if you look at people that do things, like let's take Cher for an example. Why do celebrities that we adore have such bravery? Why do we accept a share in a Bob Mackie accepting an Oscar, but we would never be caught dead in that, or we wouldn't wear that, or it would probably be on the worst dress list? Why suddenly is it so fabulous when somebody, I think we can all pretty much mutually agree, somebody may not like what she wore, but it's the confidence. It's the confidence with which she wear it. You know she loves it. You feel it instantly, but it's subconscious. You would never even doubt that she doesn't. It becomes a part of her. And this is the problem, and this is where the answer lies, that when women start developing their sense of style as they grow up, they must honor what they naturally tend to and love and like. It's not for anybody to tell you you shouldn't like purple or you shouldn't wear white after Labor Day and those ridiculous rules that we have. Personal style is your personal style, exactly what it says. It's what makes you unique. It's about celebrating your difference. But it should never be an effect. I'm going to wear this and I'm going to get the job, or if I wear this, I'll get a husband. It doesn't work, because you can put the seductive outfit on, but if you're twitching and feeling uncomfortable and it's not you, that man sitting across the room over there is not going to be your husband, because the magic doesn't happen. You don't transcend the moment. I'm going to make an analogy at this point, because I was just speaking to somebody about this. Why, you know, are models thin? And I said, why are ballet dancers thin always? You know, the medium is an old medium. It was an art, you know, created in the 1800s. And it has... not changed that much, except in abilities have become, like runners, they jump higher, and dancers, they leap higher. It's been perfected, actually, over the years. You compare a ballet dancer today to back then, and they probably wouldn't even be able to be in the company today, because a lead dancer, because their proficiency, their technique would not be. That's what's changed, is the technique. Women have no technique when it comes to getting dressed. They have forgotten that to get to the fantasy as a ballet dancer, to believe she's a swan, a sylph, a spirit, ethereal, floating, she has to create an illusion on a stage for you to be transported. You can't float necessarily if there's a weightier or a heavier body. Why are they all white? It looks incredibly contrasted against, it's not racial. There's no, that's it's not, you know. There are companies that step out and bring ethnic dancers and diversity of cultures and different colors of skin to the stage. There's some that won't break that rule. It's not a racial statement. It's art. And today that is changing in many ways, that the face of what we believe and images we've seen in creating these fantasies. But it always comes down to a thought. You know, you have to have the technique first to create that look, and then you have to transcend it. That's what great artists do, right? When you hear a great singer sing, they transcend the technique of making their voice sing the aria, and now you're suddenly having a spiritual moment when that person sings the aria. That's what you're feeling when you look at people that dress a certain way and you wish to attain that. They transcended the technique. But you have to go back to kindergarten. You have to go back to first grade, because you never got that education. Women were never trained to analyze their body shape and dress for their proportions, not their size. Size isn't the issue. They always make it that issue because that's their Achilles heel. That's their weakness. They think it's the size, but then they go get the look on, and they don't feel good either. It's not the size. It's the proportions. You know, you dress for your proportions. And they also, I think, make the goal unattainable. Don't be focusing on being a size 4, because that's what you see on magazines. If you're a 2X, a 1X, or at this point in your life, you'll never get there. It would be so insurmountable, so far away, and that it would become actually very depressing. It might send you in a tailspin in the other direction. I can't do this. This is too hard. I can't. Well, you're not going to do it in a day or a week necessarily. It's a step-by-step thing. If you're a plus-size woman, aim on being a large-size woman, and you will get there. And then before you know it, a year, 2 years will have passed, and you will be that size 4. But you'll sabotage yourself if you make the goal too challenging and too difficult. And I think today some women do that. They just give up because in terms of importance in their life, of things they have to do and take care of, their children, their lives, their family, their income, fashion and style and look have taken a back seat. You know, and then recessions happen like we see, and many people completely use that then as the jumping off and abandonment point, as we can see in businesses that trending and buying clothes is not, a lipstick will always outsell a sweater or a dress. It will always outsell it because a woman sees that as something she cannot live without, and it's the before and after effect. But it takes technique to put lipstick on correctly, but she's learned how to do that. You know what I'm saying? She's learned how to do that. And
well, let's talk about, actually, there's a few things I'd like to back up and have you respond to. The reference to, you know, ballet and, you know, it's not being racist in terms of the medium. But I distinctly remember, and it's as if it happened, you know, a couple months ago, and I'm surprised at the feelings that emerge when I, you know, I recall this in my own personal experience. You know, growing up in Pomona, California, and at the time that our family moved there, it was predominantly white, but it was transitioning. And so I lived on the side of town or the part of town called the Islands where it was becoming predominantly African American. And I remember with my two neighborhood best friends, actually there were three of us, my sister too, you know, there was this grocery store, shopping center we'd always walk to. And there was a dance studio, and I remember, you know, our faces pressed against the window looking in from the outside, and all the girls that were in there, you know, were cute little white girls in pink and black tie, you know, leotards.
You're right. It's an indelible image, hands. A little girl blonde with a chignon on top of her head, skinny and a pink tutu.
Yes,
that's
the
image
of
what
it mothers.
About.
Yeah, lined up around the edge of the studio and she dancing. And then I also remember we did this, you know, several times. And then one time our faces being there against the window and someone closing the curtain. And as if to say, you know, you not only are you not welcomed in here, but you can't even fantasize being in here and shutting that curtain.
Isn't that unbelievable?
And that is carrying such that, you know,
terrible.
And how much dance is a part of our culture, and especially
absolutely.
Growing up during the Motown era, you know, blues was a big part. And carrying privately within my spirit, you know, this longing to want to know two things. Why can't I dance? Why isn't even an option for this to be a conversation around our family's dinner table?
This is a very interesting subject you're bringing up, and it has to do with manifesting. You know, a lot of these things I'm going to be talking about, like you said, seem unusual coming from a fashion designer. It's because the social wisdoms we expect fashion designers to speak in, you know, the language we expect is somewhat fluffy, you know, oh, darling, you look gorgeous, and, you know, oh, please, don't wear white after Labor Day, and it's all kind of been trivialized. A fashion designer who's really good, who's helping his subject attain a feeling of confidence, empowerment, and to be able to finally reach a level of fantasy, and I think, let's redefine that even, it's romance more than fantasy. Romance is so needed in our society of clicking, clacking, tweeting, twacking, whatever all those words are, blogging, even though that word. We have reduced everything to a mechanical, cold element of of a machine that is supposed to allow this technology to allow us all to actually think higher, create better, connect more, and it's actually in some ways connect even spiritually more. But we have abandoned sometimes the very human need for romantic things. A cashmere blanket on a rainy day, cozy, reading a book by a fireplace. We're human. We're made of flesh and bone. We like soft, sensual things. It's, warmth, romance. I see it with the younger generation. They don't know what romance is. It's not that it has to be traditional romance. That doesn't mean red roses and a Valentine's Day card. You know, a girlfriend complained to me at a party recently. My boyfriend never gives me gifts, and he doesn't. She was a young girl, and I said, why do you need it so much to feel loved? Do you really think that means he loves you? And I said, what do you give him? And she went, oh, my God. She realized she doesn't give him what she's asking for from him. Isn't that amazing?
That's also another part of this, because we have to begin to give ourselves what we're longing for and expecting
there
from others.
There you go, and I wanted you to say it. When you peered into that dance class and thought, we're not wanted here, that was a thought. It could have been as simple as the light was glaring and they closed the window, maybe. It maybe felt that way because the culture and the plight of the African American has been powerful.
But my point is that we don't have to close the curtains on
there
our
it
own
is.
Aspirations.
That's it.
You know,
you
we
must
don't
defy
have
it
to.
At all times and hold the Lady Gaga philosophy. A girl who was told, you'll never make it in this business. You're not pretty enough. You're too heavy. You can't sing. You don't look right.
How that stays with us, and we can use it as fuel toward another experience that is rooted in that child,
right.
that girl
right.
voice experience. Or we can use it to become bitter and frustrated and just give up.
Isn't that what cancer is? You can take that cancer and figure out how that was a gift in your life and how ultimately and find the good that came from it. Because it's almost self-manifesting. If you really start from the beginning fighting it, which you have to, we always say we got to fight. You do, but it's almost before you can really have the results that I think are profound. Is an acceptance ultimately that happens, because being a cancer survivor myself, I saw where my head went. It's always worse in your mind than it is in reality. Your idea of the curtain being pulled in front of you, the danger of that thought is where your mind had it. Is it really true? Was it the reality? You could ask yourself, Byron Katie, another spiritual teacher I work with, her four questions. Is it true? How did I feel when the curtain was drawn in front of me? How does thinking that thought help me or benefit me or not? Why should I keep thinking that thought? We retrain ourselves to not think that thought. We reframe it even. And we defy it. We defy it by acting differently. And therein comes the objectification and shifting of a paradigm, a culture, a consciousness, because, yes, one person leads to their girlfriends. Their girlfriends leads to a small group. Their small group leads to a little town. A little town leads to seeping into a wave. You know, what is the introduction of your show speaks to a group of women. And I was thinking I wonder if people misinterpret that and think they can't listen to the show if they're not wealthy. It's not literal. Wealthy in spirit.
Wealth is in spirit. Yeah, the definition of
wealth. There you go. I was wondering about
self-defined.
That because I was thinking that could intimidate somebody and make them feel like, hey, I can't listen to this show. I'm not. But you're not thinking of yourself wealthy is why you're not wealthy. Do you see? That means that's your cue, actually. I better keep listening because I better keep listening.
Yeah, because we can find the parts of ourselves that we're seeking from others. It's already within us to be able to create the experience that we want.
And I think it goes right back to
embracing ourselves, because I didn't carry, and I don't know about my girlfriend, I know about one girlfriend in particular, because a year or so ago we had this conversation, and she remembered that as well, but it came up because she saw a photograph of me in a ballroom dance competition, and she said, "Well, and even now in our 50s, you know, I'd love to dance. I wish I could do that." That's the same voice as when we were little girls looking in the window. Gosh, I'd love to dance. I wish we could do that. And how we interpreted that experience and carried it with us forward unconsciously, because again, we were little girls, but for me, internalizing it as, you know, I don't know why this isn't, I don't see people who look like me doing this, but it doesn't mean that people who look like me can't do this. It just
That's
means
it. You had all of it in one thought. You had the brilliance of the answer that the highest spiritual guide or teacher would give you, and you had the insecurity of the human living in a spirit, living in a human condition in a human world, feeling left out, excluded, and that is very much a part of our world. If I act this way, I'll be part of this group. If I don't do this, I won't get that. Our thoughts limit us, imprison us, create the war that is inside of us that is always worse than the war, the oppression, the repression, the abuse, all the lower consciousness values and emotions that we think of as bad. They're not really bad, because that's a matter of how you look at it again. But if you measure it on purely a physical, worldly, human level, you would say in this world that's bad. You know, you want to reach that higher level of spiritual, and it's hard because you're not in your pure spiritual form. You are a body living in a world where you will be judged on how you look. You will be. It's not right. Mommy, you know, he called me a funny name because I have a different skin color. The little girl who runs home from school in kindergarten when she's mocked or made fun of. We all go through this in one way or another. There are people, there are guiding lights, so to speak, and that know themselves earlier than others. A moment of elation. They know who they are in the universe. A 3-year-old prodigy playing a piano concerto, you know, from China. How does this happen? We look at it as like, oh, that's inside of everyone. Everyone. They just haven't found theirs yet. It's really know yourself. What is that quote, that famous quote? Know first who you are, and then adorn yourself accordingly. I just remembered it.
Yeah,
that is a Greek philosopher. Yeah. You know, the Greeks had their stuff together. You know, I mean, in many ways, because therein lies that fantasy, you know, that look, that ethereal, that. But it's the metaphor for what we all want to feel. But they were able to really translate it into a language, you know, to a language that's so beautiful. I mean, know first who you are and then adorn yourself accordingly. How could you ever get dressed if you didn't know who you were?
We have some callers, but we also have emails and texts coming through from listeners. So I want to ask, you know, start sharing these questions with you so you can respond to them. There is a text that's coming from, it looks like it's coming from, somewhere in England. It is someone in England, and they're asking, how do we mine, you know, in terms of mining and digging, excavate our own experiences and bring them to a place where we're able, I'm trying to understand, I'm reading her text and trying to make sense of it so it is an interpretation. How do we excavate the experiences to help create the look that makes us feel more confident?
Right. That's very interesting language, using the metaphor of mining, and it can seem confusing because she's chosen the something that's about excavating and chipping away the debris and the non-golden to get to the ore, to get to the diamond, to get to the inside of everybody. It's beautiful. To get to that ballet dancer inside those windows pressed against the face that think I can never be that. You can be anything you want to be, but you have to believe it. How do you believe it? You have to mine the experience, eliminate the negative thoughts, stop the chatter. How many women I dress, I don't care how beautiful, and I'm not going to name names, that are as insecure because of their thoughts about it and always thinking what they have is not as beautiful. I even read Nicole Kidman saying, I wish I looked like Jennifer Lopez. I've always wanted to be curvaceous and sexy. And the one who looks like Jennifer Lopez saying, I'm never going to be tall. I can't, you know, they've always worn lifts and high shoes. And, you know, we all do this. We seem to think there's something attainable or more beautiful or special or privileged or more lovable. It comes down to lovable, ultimately, I think, is what it really is. You know, and that's where you see so many, I think, younger people today saying, when you ask them what they'd like to be when they grow up, that the simplistic way of looking at it, a lot of it revolves around fame, because so much of these current days are about the Facebooking and the self-promotion world of being great at social media, which is all building a big billboard about who you are, what you are. The positive in that is it helps you reach deeper in mining what you love. If you go wrong, it means you're simply jumping on the bandwagon of creating a false image because you want to be loved, followed, and become viral. The truth is it can be very dangerous because you're just putting a bunch of images up that are not really true to how you feel. One way that you can do this that the listener is asking is you have to reclaim your style, meaning that if you already have this diamond within you, you have to get to it. You have to figure out what it is you love. You have to put away all the magazines, or not put them away, you have to keep them, but first you have to really take a systematic approach to remembering and finding out what it is you love. People always say this when they're asked about, well, what's your passion? And, you know, it's almost become cliche at this point. You say to someone, when they're stuck, they don't know what they want to be when they grow up, you'll say, well, what do you love? It's simple. Because people that have done that with their lives, that have become artists or designers, that's what I wanted to be, and I went and I did it. That's harder for some people. It's okay not to know at 18 what you want to major in, even when the question comes in college. If you don't know, you don't know. You know, you may have to make a choice in something more broad, but go with something at least in the direction you know you want to be in the arts. Then take a liberal arts course or take something like that as an example. So in translating that to mining your own personal experience as it comes to beauty, acceptance of self, style, and the look, you must start noticing the repetition and rhythm of what you love. You're always drawn to black and white. Isn't that strange? I have black and white house. I have black and white dresses. I love black and white home furnishings. I all my accessories always seem to be black and white. It may be something as simple as when you grew up as a little baby, your grandmother had incredible style and she always wore these gorgeous deco black and white things. Pictures were black and white that you loved. Remember? Pictures were black and white. So we see a world of the past and we glamorize it, we fantasize it, we see it as better than our world today. It was in black and white and we still think it's more glamorous. There's something very glamorous about black and white. It's the photos of our past.
There's also some very practical techniques that I have found throughout the years to be helpful. I first learned them actually from a girlfriend and her mom, and then later on saw it presented many years later by Julia Cameron in her book, The Artist's Way.
Yes. I've done that work. She's incredible, Julia.
She is, and she's been on Sylvia Global, and she'll be back. It'd be nice to engage her in a conversation with you. But some of the, you know, one very simple technique was to take all of those fashion magazines and just, without thinking about it or pausing, to just tear the page, you know.
That's
the
where I was going. That's exactly
that
right.
You know,
A
just
plus.
Pull those
That's what
out
you do.
And
right.
then put them on a board.
Correct.
You know, just get quiet. You know, for me, I put my favorite music on and get my favorite beverage and just.
Notice the words you're choosing. All the things that make you feel
that
good.
That make me feel good.
Right.
And just.
In other words, if you want to feel that fantasy inside that room that seems that you're excluded from, do it to yourself. Drink the beverage that makes you glow. Drink the fabric that makes you feel empowered and goddess and sensual when you touch it. Surround yourself with things you love. Why would you not paint your favorite colors in your home? Why would you listen to a television show telling you never use this and don't? Those rules are all for the effect of the medium. Television, remember, they're trying to sell something. It's always about trying to sell something. In this case, it's not. You're trying to attain a feeling. There's no money attached to it. Can it lead to a great job? Can it manifest in wealth, to use your word, that transcends money? And see, we hear wealth and we immediately think it's the car we drive, it's how much money we have in the bank account. We have to invest in the wealth of our thoughts, the wealth of positive thoughts, the wealth of empower, truly naturally, instinctively powerful and empowering thoughts that can save the world. And you know when we all have that instinct. We all know when something doesn't feel right. You know, there was just something about it. I met this person, and when I had this feeling in my stomach, and it's why when I see a woman put something on, and she looks in front of the mirror, and she starts tugging on her hair, or pushing her lips out, or holding her waist in to make it look thinner. I said, take the dress off. Please take it off. Not right. How did you know? I said, well, you're pushing your lips out like you need to get fat injections. You're focusing on everything you don't like about yourself right now. I can see it. You don't feel beautiful.
You shared an example with me last week of a, someone that you dressed for the Oscars, and in preparing to dress her, you signed her up for a ballet class.
Yeah, even better. I picked her up. I said, are you really ready to do this? And we can say who this is. This is, actually, let's not. Maybe I shouldn't say this. It's better to leave it, because I think it's almost better as an example, because then you don't attach an image to it so much.
Yeah.
She was really ready to commit. And it isn't always that way. You can often stand in your own way. Committing means letting go, too. It doesn't mean rigidity. It means I'm giving myself to you, Randolph. I'm really going to jump off that cliff, and somebody's going to catch me. It's full of faith. That's what faith is. You don't know how you're going to make it. You don't know how you're going to attain this thing, but God's going to
jump
carry
off
you.
And do it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to jump off, and it will happen. And it does if you really believe, because you got to start somewhere. So many times people, their impulse is to do something, but there's an attachment to why they're doing it that ultimately sabotages it in the end. That's because they're ahead of themselves. They think they're going to get such and such if they do such and such, and then it sort of fizzles out. That's not the right intention. The intention has to be so pure, because it's you love it. Get those magazines, rip the pages out. This is how designers create their collections. They have to start with something. They do it from books, but they do it from everything. They do it from a shell they find on the beach. Donna Karan, I was once told, brought in a dried bowl of oatmeal that she loved the color and texture of and had it created into a yarn to create sweaters. Inspiration is around us constantly. Sometimes people rack their brain for the inspiration. Gee, I have writer's block. I don't know what I'm going to write about. I'm stumped, or my next collection is coming up and I haven't even begun. We're thinking so much that we're not responding. Oh, my God, I just didn't stop and smell the roses. I'm looking out a window now and I see the most beautiful pale yellow rose. I've never seen that color. It's right in front of you all of the time, the beauty. It's the perception that changes and the way you look at it that does. You can't even see it when you're stressed or you're trying to find out how to get out of this writer's block. It's always right there in front of us. When you go to these magazines, you'll naturally find things that you're drawn to. And after you collect them long enough, you'll start seeing a repetition. And that repetition shows you, well, I clearly love the color pink, or I clearly love the color purple. And nobody can tell you that's wrong. And nobody can tell you that your desire to be a ballet dancer can't happen. Back to Lady Gaga, It does take a certain level of being able to bravery, in some cases, to enter a worldly profession or something that may seem so unattainable because of one's education, or, I can't go there because I don't have training in that. There's always ways. There's always ways for these dreams to come true. But the minute your voice or your mind says, I can't, I shouldn't, I didn't, I want to be a filmmaker, but you go around saying, but I didn't go to film school and I can't afford it, well, that's not going to happen. Guess what? It's not. Not with that attitude. You have to monitor the thoughts and push those aside that, and this is a physical way, by collecting things and surrounding yourself with things that make you feel good, that are going to keep you from being negative. If every time you get dressed you start thinking a negative thought about how you look, you could actually wind up being dressed beautifully and look beautiful. But if you're saying negative things to yourself, no matter who tells you, gee, you look great today, you're not going to feel that. It's like the woman who lost the 100 pounds but still feels like that little girl who was made fun of because she was overweight. It you haven't really manifested what the shift was about. You haven't really honored it in yourself.
There's another question. How do I distinguish between again, I'm going to have to try and interpret this. It's coming in from Virginia. How do I distinguish between a healthy self-image and following the trend?
Very easy. Very easy. It speaks right to what we were speaking about. If somebody tells you, that is so yesterday, you've got to cut your hair into a pink mohawk and pierce your nose and tattoo a heart on your forehead. I'm just being real random here. because that's a trend, and we suddenly see that. Let's do something realistic then. Let's not use that. But the point is, do you do it? If it feels wrong to you and doesn't make you feel good, there's your cue. It just you did it for the wrong reason, and it only ultimately winds up leading to, yeah, you'll do it for a little while, and then all of a sudden you start feeling that old feeling again, like, I'm not happy. Why? Because I didn't really love that trend. I just dressed that way. That's why there really is an incredible freedom today. You don't have to dress. Why did people follow, you know, in the 50s, one style or one way? Imagine how radical it was to stick out in the 50s, to wear things that were truly revolutionary, or to, you know, be a Marlene Dietrich and wear a man's suit. A woman had never been seen in pants. And here is a movie star who's so famous. That's why I think celebrities are very an interesting iconic image to focus on, why we're so obsessed on them. We're so obsessed on them because they are our modern-day gods and goddesses. The silver screen is merely Marilyn Monroe transference of Aphrodite. There's not a lot of difference. She had an indelible image because they created something on the screen that transported you when you see her. It's not only in the clothes that make the person, but the way in which she embodied that in her diffusion of Norma Jean. You know, it was magic. The chemistry was just between the subject and then the image they created just worked. I would never believe that if somebody said to me Marilyn didn't like the way they made her look, that's not possible. She would have never been able to convey the authenticity, the fragility, the vulnerability to make her so iconic. There had to be something about that just fit her perfectly, you know. And it was revolutionary because women didn't look that way when she came about, or Audrey Hepburn. You know, here is a gamine, that's the word they use, the French word, which, you know, is slightly more pixie, more boyish, short hair, big eyebrows, skinny, not rounded, curvy, not the previous model. And this is how evolution goes on. Things shift. But they're brave people who step out first, you know. They believe it so much that they are it. There's no arguing it. There's no, and that's why the Chers and the Audrey Hepburns and the Marlene Dietrichs, their confidence is so innate we don't even question it. You transcend the trend and what feels right to us by honoring what feels right to you. It's very simple. The answer is in the lady's question. If it feels wrong, I don't care who says it's the thing to do, you don't do it, because this isn't life or death. You're not going to die if you don't get the pink mohawk with the purple. You might actually be leading people into the better trend, because I don't know, that's such a great trend anyway. Well, I mean, you know, we all have taste levels of things. We scratch our head and go, gee, I don't know if that was the best look I had in the 1970s when I had that big hair. But remember, in the 70s, there was two ways to look. It's funny. Let's use that as an example. Why does it seem that fashion always comes back to that decade? I can think of decades that I like more, that I think people looked more beautiful, more elegant, like maybe the 30s. But the 70s did have two looks. It had that kind of platform shoe, big hair look, but it also had kind of a 1930s redux. There was that Bianca Jagger, Halston, to use something close to myself that I loved and then even went on to design, that was a sleeker, pulled back, slicked hair, almost a hybrid of the 1930s look made modern. And that was a really chic and beautiful look. There was something always very, I think, refined about it. And so even in the 70s, there were two sort of lanes you could be in that sort of somehow coexisted. And but in other cases, there's some things that are just, you know, that wasn't the best look, was it? You know, you can go back and you can see them, and it's becomes fairly universal. What the test of time is, I think, what shows us. The test of time. Can that product stand the test of time? You know, that's why things that are good, they just last. Ketchup. You can be the Queen of England and love it, and you can be, you know, a homeless guy on the street and love it. I mean, ketchup transcends the test of time. It just works. It just works. There's not really much arguing about it. You may not like it, but you would have to say that it's something that transcends classes, economic brackets. You know, it's just a good bar. We're all trying to invent that thing that everybody loves. You know, but it, especially today, I think it's become much more or less about exclusivity. Everybody wants to feel that fantasy. Your you're saying. People want to vote for their stars. They want to have a voice in what they listen to. So we have American Idol. People actually get to have a voice in picking who that is. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing.
There's another question. It's from Canton, Ohio, and she wants to know how to teach her daughter the techniques that you're referring to and how to make sure that it's age appropriate.
Very good question. You know, really, very good question. The age appropriate comes down, I think, probably to very specific situations and probably asking for help. Something that is an advice tip that I give that's probably the only one I probably use with students and young people most when they ask me how to attain their dreams or achieve, and I look back at my own career and think, and I don't tend to be someone who believes in the word regret, because you use the word, you're already down that lane of thinking you did something wrong, rather than it was all as it should have been, even the mistakes, the falling down, the things I thought were disappointments but led to this. That's the way of turning the lemons into lemonade. And you must always stay in that perspective. And that goes back to cancer and trying to find the gift. But the age appropriateness must come from the person who's influencing that child or who's around that child and asking the right questions and going to people that can help, and also being very, very in tune with your instinct. And you kind of know when it's not age appropriate, don't we? I mean, we know when something just doesn't. Are we saying that because it's a social wisdom and they can go on the internet and see what you're trying to shield them from anyway? Is it realistic? Or is putting a safety lock on this particular website, or is making some stricter rules around the house that we don't watch this kind of programming, or we don't advocate gossiping in this house? You know, it's so interesting when you hear people that have been raised in a way where you just sense that parent did a terrific job. That parent was, you know, got an A+ in parenting because they instinctively knew what was right. A lot of it comes down to there's not something outside of you that you can ask somebody else that you don't know, but you may not know it at that moment. You may not have mined it, to use that other woman's words.
Right.
You may have not excavated the debris that's keeping it hidden from you. But if you meditate, if you're quiet, if you ask that thought within your head, is it appropriate for me to let my daughter go to this hot movie that's out there right now, but I feel like this could be a little bit not right at her age. She may not interpret it correctly, or is that my limitation? She may be way ahead of me. You know, in my generation, that would have been, it wouldn't have worked for me because I didn't have the exposure to the same things. For her, she may actually benefit by seeing this thing. She probably already knows it. You have to ask yourself this very difficult question in a quiet, peaceful way, meditate, and the answer will come. I think that's an unusual answer, and it may seem wishy-washy, but the truth is there always isn't the right answer, you know, in a book or from an expert. It's a very case-by-case individual thing, depending on mostly the subject you're speaking about, you know. Think about how you could hold somebody back if you didn't allow them to try something and suddenly you see they have a great talent at it. You know, it's that prodigy. What if you didn't let them try that instrument because she's too
young? I wonder also, Randolph, if you kind of flip it around, if the question could be interpreted from the adult's perspective, you know, holding on to the fantasy of our youth,
right,
and embracing where we are at an older stage in life, and
right,
being able to distinguish what techniques to use to not only excavate the new parts of ourselves that we need to embrace and the old parts that we should let go, and reveal this beautiful part of us that's who we are now.
Perfectly said, Dale. I sort of stumbled along there and made a bunch of metaphors and hard to distinguish things, and you summed it up. Let's do that, Gail. That was beautiful. You just channeled an answer. I bet you couldn't repeat it if I had asked you to do it now. I hope you can, you know, hit play back, because that was a channeled, perfect statement. Every word was God speaking through Gail right there. She said it better than I did, but I inspired her to say it.
You inspired me. You know, we have this connection going on between you and I.
And we had happen the other day, remember? You had this perfect description. It was like an ad agency search for that.
And I was like, did you record it? Because I can't repeat it.
It was that catchphrase. It was like, oh, that was it. That was every word was right where it should be. That's your answer to that question, caller. I have to say that I was getting there, but you know, that was the succinct way of giving the answer. That was a beautiful threading together of all three questions we've had, because it is all connectivity. It is all connected. It's all in some ways the same question. It really does come back to you. Answered that beautifully.
Thank you. And we actually have people that are calling in, but I'm having, this technical problem, and I don't want to risk losing you on the broadcast. So I'm texting them back and asking them to text their response, and I have our producer asking them to give her the information, and she's...
Wonderful, because I think we're talking about some amazing things, you know, that go to a very deep place, you know, and it's not that it makes it boring or deep or difficult. It's actually makes it incredible. I mean, that metaphor of mining and excavating is so empowering, because the riches that are there to be found from really going within and honoring what you love naturally is your roadmap to a happy life. You know,
it also implies that there's a spiritual significance to the success of capturing the images we associate with the fashion industry. You know, that there is a spiritual component to our existence, and it's revealed in our, you know, it's kind of revealed externally as well, and a way of revealing our spiritual security and groundedness is our confidence in what we, our body type and how we carry ourselves, and getting to a place, no matter where that place might be, that we're, you know, many of us might struggle to attain, but we can start right where we are.
That's
looking
right.
at the finest details of goodness around us, like you refer to, you know, the bowl of oatmeal or the pale yellow and rose, just looking for the good that is around us will start
that's
to
it.
Help us identify the good that's within us.
That's
and
it.
Then we'll find that we want to have that experience repeated again and again, and we'll begin to incorporate within our living spaces to the finest detail things that are beautiful, that we embrace and define as being beautiful, that make us feel good, and we'll leave no space unturned. I know the first time, Randolph, that I, you know, came upon this understanding, again, it was also instilled in me in many ways, surprising ways when I think back on it as a little girl, but I don't believe that there should be any space within my environment, my work environment or my living environment, that I dread going into. You know, some people have the closet or the laundry room where it's just, you know, jam-packed with stuff, and they hate opening the door for fear things are going to fall on them.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so one day, you know, not just one day, but over a course of a weekend, you know, the same technique, like, what's intriguing me? And at that moment in time, you know, HGTV had just started to air, so it was new, and they were talking about Americana. And I was, you know, in this period of American history, and I started reflecting back that, gee, that period of American history for African Americans wasn't this glamorous side they were depicting, you know, around the story. So I contacted a girlfriend at the Library of Congress. You know, do you have any books on, I refer to it as Negrocana. You know, and then the next thing I know, it just starts, I guess, channeling or coming out through me. I paint this laundry room, which before had been kind of a dreaded place to open a door, this beautiful mango color, and then I got this, you know, imitation kente cloth and put it on the border instead of doing the, you know, regular wood trim. I hot glued it and put it on and put it up as molding. And then I had this, created this kind of artistic atmosphere in this workspace called a laundry room. And it became such a family, you know, point of humor, because people would come to our house and say, can I show them your laundry room? I want them to see your laundry room.
Isn't that interesting? Because it was such a channeled expression of something that culturally held a significance, and it could have easily been abandoned, because I have a very similar experience. I went to Ghana and Togo in Africa with the Salvation Army, who asked me to get involved with them. I was like, this is odd. Salvation Army asking Randolph Duke to, you know, help people in Africa. And I thought, boy, God works in mysterious ways. It was one of the most significant things I've ever done, even though we were, I think, probably not as mapped out in what we wanted to achieve because it was ambitious, but it still had incredible effect, and I think still created a ripple and a trick of something that has continued today. And it was really to sort of help bring an understanding to business owners in a mostly a poverty-stricken region, but and more largely a region that has a lot of scarring from the years of slavery and where most of the slaves were gathered before shipped off from the western coast of Africa, that the paradigm is not shifting because the people that live there, the way they treat each other, and the way they have somewhat abandoned the natural cultural arts and thinking that the key is to becoming like places they perceive as affluent and wealthy as their ticket out is exactly really forsaking yourself. And something very magical happened when I saw a lot of the direction of the things these people wanted to create that they thought were going to bring them wealth. They were all copies of Puma and Nike and Adidas, and they were all very American. And then I looked at all their beautiful kente cloths and their batiks and their techniques and their embroideries and their crafts. And I opened up a book that was runway shots from Paris and the highest fashion houses of Gaultier and Dior. And there were collections, you know, based completely on this tribe and that tribe and Africa and the beauty of the and exotic combinations of colors and fabrics and techniques and vibrancy of non-black, you know, just color and richness. And they were like, that's ours, this is ours, this is ours, this is our pentacle. And they were inspired, re-inspired by their own thing. It was amazing. They fused it with something modern that spoke to a new way of doing it, not rather than the traditional silhouette, the traditional fabric. And something really amazing happened. They fused it with a world look, you know, something that was very cool in, you know, denim, and something that was happening in, you know, sport clothes from Puma and Nike that they saw as very desirable to young people, and something very, very amazing happened in it. They didn't abandon their cultural gifts, you know, in this area. They fused them into the broader cross-cultural picture. And if nothing else, that one thing that happened, I think was so powerful because it was positive. They thought that they had to abandon what they had created. They didn't even think it was subconscious. They were abandoning it because they weren't achieving results. I think that felt like, you know, I'm putting dinner on the table. I'm providing a better world for my children, and their thoughts were what was really standing in the way. They had become manifesting their own enslavement. They were enslaving themselves, you know, with these thoughts. And it's so beautiful what we allowed to sort of rise to the surface there. And it shifted very, very slightly. It's not easy to shift a paradigm in a place like that. But what you did is you did that. That was so naturally something that was almost part of your DNA, you know, in some ways. To use the kente cloth and to use the colors you chose, and you really didn't. You didn't edit based on, well, what would somebody think, and that's always the thing people wind up loving the most, you know.
And I started with a part, you know, of the space, whether it's within or externally, that didn't consume my every movement, but I could open and close the door to my own comfort level of it and just start small. And
well,
then,
that's
of
the attainable.
Course,
that's what I mean by not making the goal so big that you gave yourself too ambitious of a project, and you know it just didn't become attainable. Whether it be a diet or whether it be decorating a room, you can't, you know, you keep it manageable so that you can be successful in it. That's a very good thing you did. Yeah. You know, you made it go from something that I'm not a decorator, I don't know, to becoming, well, I'm pretty good at this. Look at what I did with this. And the next time the room can be a little larger, and the next time the room can be a little bit more of a space you move through. You don't, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. Right.
And that's what you're going to be helping, you know, Sylvia Global listeners and looking forward to do it, viewers do, is start with what's attainable and make their world beautiful and themselves feel
right.
beautiful by taking what they have.
That's it. It's
Thanks so much for being here.
Surround yourself with the things you're sure of. You know that, you know, chamomile tea is your favorite. That you know that lavender roses are your favorite. You know that the color sets really special aqua, slightly greenish blue, that you know it when you see it. You may not know what to call it. Makes you feel beautiful. You know, paint your bedroom that color. You know, start with what you know for sure are your top 10 favorite things. You know, that's how you figure out what you want to be when you grow up, by the way. It is, because you'll get there. You'll get there. The room will get bigger. It won't just be 10 things, then there'll be 20 things. And then you'll see the rhythm, the repetition. Oh, I like
Thanks,
these kinds
Randall.
Of things.
we're Wednesday. 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, Randolph Duke. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Gail. It's
okay.
been so much fun. I thought we could go on for hours,
You've been
but we'll
listening
be back
to Sylvia
week.
Global with your host, Gail Sylvia. Become a subscriber to Sylvia Global for unique listener opportunities. Follow on Twitter and like them on Facebook. For more information, go to www.sylviaglobal.com. That's Sylvia, SYLVIA, Global. GLOBAL.com